I'm doing what I enjoy doing. It's like other men like to play golf, so they play golf every chance they can. So you don't say to them, how come you're playing golf today? You played last week. It was the same with me. To me, it is such fun creating characters, writing stories. It's an exciting life. And when you do something that you know the fans seem to enjoy, that gives you such satisfaction, you don't want to stop.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode 180 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me is, as always, the marvellous creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And our one and only true believer, it's Tony Esmond.
Hello.
Yes, as I said then, 180, we've made it to 180.
I know, we're like the first appearance of Wolverine, aren't we? Yeah. Like, that's good.
God, 180.
You must be great in like a comic book pub quiz, Tony.
I wish I had them, I'd be alright.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should do something like that when we host our first ever convention. Who knows, will it happen?
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah. Well, by the way, don't get too excited, folks. That's not something we've planned. That's just...
Yeah. Although Dan keeps planning it. You can mention it.
Yeah. I started looking into it and saw how much work it was. And I was like, oh, I can't do this.
Yeah. Let's...
We always have a convention in our hotel room. Yeah. Let's do it that way. Yeah,
very sexy convention. Anyway, this week's show is a little different than all the others. We've done our guests pretty much for the whole year, and what a fantastic year it's been for guests, creators, and more, and reading books. But this episode, like I say, it's going to be different because we wanted to do a little something about Stan Lee.
Yeah.
As we all know, I mean, anyone who's anyone beyond comics, in fact, knows that this year Stan Lee unfortunately passed away after leaving one hell of a legacy. Should we say? That's an understatement, isn't it? And I think us as a collective, how can we not do a show talking a little bit about it?
We had to mark it in some way, didn't we? We had a discussion about it and we thought, well, we got to do something.
We didn't want to do the let's fucking bang one out as quick as possible. And I'm not having a pop at anyone who did do that, but we kind of made the decision not to kind of do that, didn't we?
Yeah. And we also didn't want to do the whole let's do the history of Stan, because people are doing that, and we just wanted to talk a little bit about him and his comics, I suppose, didn't we?
Pretty much. And this show is very much like a chat down the pub or the cafe. Anyway, it's one of the things that people do say about us when they're saying something nice. It just feels like a casual chat. So this is more about like what did Stan mean to us? You know, the imprint he left on this pop culture world we live on, because without him the world is a very, very different place.
Our little world, certainly.
And also we're all about the positives. We're not going to run through the life of, like, you know, whatever went down. When this is all about just showing some praise to someone that created quite a big noise in this medium that we love.
So, yeah, I think we don't need to go through the business arrangements and the fallouts. I'm not interested in that anyway, to be fair. And when you got to think, this geezer became an assistant at Timely, which obviously then later became Marvel, in 1939. And it's apart from the sort of a few, like, he went to war for a while and there was a little bit of movie shenanigans going on. He was pretty much in comics from 1939 till, till earlier this year. It's incredible, you know.
Yeah.
Talk about a legacy.
And certainly, if you want to find out more about the goings and comings, there are books, there are audio books, there's all kinds of things you can read. And not just about Stan, but about everyone in the comics world. And to be honest, I've only started reading or listening to that sort of stuff over the past few years, and it's fascinating. So if you haven't checked out, for instance, what's the Marvel Comics one, Tony? I've forgotten the name of it.
I can't see it from where I'm sitting.
Is it We Are Marvel?
the Marvel comics. Oh, I can't see it. I've got a Sin City figure blocking the spine, so I can't read it to you.
There's that phrase, like, we're kind of where we are because we're standing on the shoulders of giants. Mm. And Stan Lee is definitely one of those figures.
Yeah.
He's an absolute titan.
Yeah. There are a lot of people, certainly in the comic book industry, let alone the community, who are probably getting a nosebleed from standing on that giant's shoulders. So this week we're pretty much just going to talk a bit about Stan, a little bit about the book. There's going to be an interesting question we're going to raise later. We've got some lovely comments from Facebook and a few from Twitter. So this week, as always, it's just going to be a bit of a love-in between the three of us.
Yeah.
Doesn't get sexier than that. Although,
do you know what else you love?
What's that, Tony?
Is it Comic House?
It is. Oh, wow. You've got it too, have you?
I am.
Oh, brilliant.
We love Comic House.
We do. And and they love us because they are our sponsor. God bless them. Yes, they're the comic indie marketplace that everyone needs to check out. There's a huge selection of titles on the website and the database. Now, if you don't know about it and you publish your own comics, and for instance, if you've got print copies of your own comics, I'm sure there's many people out there who've probably got boxes in their spare room of all the comics that they want to ship when they're not at a convention.
I've got boxes from the 90s of comics I never sold.
Well, Tony, you could list any of those on the Comic House website for free, and then
and just cringe every time someone bought one of mine. Jesus Christ.
Although when they bought it, Comic House only charged a penny.
That's nice.
That'd be good. So that's another avenue for you folks to sell your comics online. And if that wasn't enough, they've created something which has made quite a way. I think it's sailing now, isn't it? It's properly going. That's the Comic House app.
Yeah.
Which we love. We read. I know I've got a queue of things I'm going to read over the Christmas period. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to throw myself back into Dynamite. I haven't read a Dynamite comic for a couple of months. What I do sometimes,
I mean, I do this with Comic House much like I do with sometimes Netflix or anything like that, is I don't just like do it bit by bit. Sometimes I like to store a couple of weeks up and then go in and read loads in one go. So
yeah, you... I try never to go out with a loaded gun, so I know what you're saying. But
Yeah. does it make you feel more relaxed?
Yeah, quite off. Laid back.
Takes the edge off, yeah. But you're not as sharp, though, are you? You know, you're not as focused.
Oh no, where's this going now?
I'll tell you where it's going. It's going to the Comic House app.
Comic House is sharp.
They're sharp as hell.
Both sharp and laid back.
They're laid back, sharp, and this
like
is going to be wrong.
It's going to the rails.
I tell you what. Yeah. Before it goes too off the rails, what is there on Comic House at the moment, Dan?
There's a whole slew of stuff. One of the things is Ken Reynolds is the featured creator, and there's got work from him in 100% Biodegradable 5, Close, Cognition. He's got some work in Comic House, In Trouble. I think he's got some stuff in Little
Slice
Heroes
Quarterly.
As well.
Slice Quarterly,
yeah.
I'm in that. Get on that. I'm in Slice Quarterly. Yeah,
me and Vince are in Comic House.
So our
taint can be filled throughout.
Pardon? Don't talk about feeling taints.
I've already done that. Already covered that. But yeah, we've also got Operation Boom Issue 3, Masquerade Volume 1, Super Zombies 3, Surrealsville 8, Raise the Dead 2, Mask 2 Volume 6, Flash Gordon from Dynamite. That's a Christmas episode, so good, nice bit of Christmas reading. Scrimshaw 1 and Solar Man of the Atom Issue 9. So like Tony said, there's an absolute slew of Dynamite titles on there.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I love Dynamite books. I really like their sort of just balls to the wall action sort of. Yeah, I really like this stuff. Yeah.
Also on the featured print indie comics for sale. Obviously, you've got the Awesome Comics issue 1-3 available for sale now, and you've got Needleman. They've got in the top 10 of the Pipe Dream comics. That's, I've not actually read that one, so
I like that actually, man. It's good. I double dipped on that one because I like it so much. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. So. There's all this and many, much more on the Comic House app.
There you go. And if you want
to check it out.
Dan has done such a professional job there. I don't need to say any more. So if you want to find out more about Comic House and what they do, and to find out about a 14-day free trial of the app, and to dive headfirst into the world of small press that we talk about probably in a very distracting way week on week, then go to comichouse.com. So there you go. Yeah.
Comic House. Comic House.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a house made of bricks. Yeah.
Put your comic on there. Doesn't cost anything. It's free. As long as you can make a PDF of it, it's you're kind of done and dusted.
I would have done, but you lost me a PDF there, don't I?
If you have any come against troubles like that, the best place to ask is go into the Facebook group with the awesome chat. Ask the question, and then people will help you out.
Okay. Yeah, he's good.
It's full of lovely people. But we'll get on to where you can find that later.
Yeah.
But for now, we're going to talk a little bit about Stan Lee. Stan the Man Lee. How many other names did he go by?
Oh, there must be a few out there.
Yeah. Sure Steve Ditko had a few. Yeah. Was he Stanley Liebowitz, his real name? Is that right? I can't remember what he said. But basically,
Stanley Martin Lieber.
Yeah. He said, I'm going to use Stan Lee as a kind of pen name because I don't want anyone to associate my comic book work when I make it as a proper writer.
Because he wanted to write the Great American Novel, and he wanted to save his proper name for that book. Yeah.
And this is what you're known for.
And quite right too.
Yeah, he grew into it.
There's more of a legacy here than there ever would have been with a couple of novels. I'm sure.
So obviously, much like our Kirby episode, which was well received, Tony is our. Tony's going to take the lead on this one, even though it is more of a chat.
Yeah, so it's like a freewheeling chat. We're not going to. I think more with Kirby, we did like a sort of potted history. Yeah. But I'm not going to do that. Apart from a couple of little facts as we go along.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about it. Yeah. I suppose everyone who knows me or in any way sort of follows me on Twitter or anything like that knows that I named my dog after Stan.
Yeah.
You know, he's a huge influence. He's one of those sort of. If I ever had to put my influences on Mount Rushmore, he'd certainly be. His head would certainly be there, you know.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean by that, guys, it's sort of. Yeah. The it's something that you and I both share this, Dan. Actually, because I remember being at UCAC and I've been racking my brains and trying to do a bit of internet research to figure out what UCAC it was. I'm going to say it was the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I was a bit of a sort of. I suppose I was a bit of a sort of lone comic reader, having had a father in the forces and having sort of traveled around a bit and been a bit of a boarding school kid. I didn't really have sort of friends at home, and I'd moved to my own place in the big city, and I was working on a shift pattern at work, and I went to UCAC, and I was a bit of a sort of I was standing in the it was in a sort of university lecture hall, as I recall, Dan. I don't know whether you remember this.
I was a little younger than you. I struggled to recall what it was.
Yeah,
It was kind of like one of those kind of buildings.
Yeah, and it had a lot of lecture theatre, and I remember we were all waiting outside to go in to go, because they have a back then they used to introduce all the guests by bringing them on stage, and they would all sort of say something to the crowd and that sort of thing. And there was a big crowd outside, and I remember the while standing there sort of on my own with a sort of rucksack ready to buy a load of the comics, I remember the sort of crowd parted, and I didn't know that he was going to be there, and walking through the crowd was Stan Lee. And when you think about it, he was probably in his 70s even then, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, who's that man everyone's surrounded by? Because back then you didn't have Twitter and you didn't have the internet and all that sort of crap. And you were sort of, you only knew people often from how they were drawn in the comics. And Stan was often drawn in comics, wasn't he? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it took me a sort of second to realize, oh my God, that's Stan Lee. And as the sort of the waves parted and he was a little entourage or people following him around chatting to him, he walked past me and I sort of automatically stuck my hand out to shake his hand, and so I just said, oh, thanks, like that. And he actually said to me, no, thank you. And I thought, well, that's like the best moment of my life.
Yeah,
I mean, that is the best thing ever. And from that point I thought, fucking, whilst I've been on side with him before, I'll never not be on side with Stan. Do you know what I mean? I know there's people who like to knock him and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And have a go at him. Well, I'm certainly not one of those people, because generally I think he's a force for good in comics, and I think anyone who says he isn't, they're on bad footing with me. But I remember we all then went into the hall, and I was sitting there and he came on, and I remember him saying to the audience that he'd never seen a bigger crowd of comic fans all in one place before. And even as a sort of slightly stupid early, you know, late teenager, I thought, that's not true, is it?
No.
He must have been. Yeah. He must have been to some big American events or stuff like that. And I don't know whether it was, you know, but I'm kind of thinking it probably wasn't. And he was just being nice.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, this is amazing. He was so positive about everything. And then they sort of introduced him. They introduced all the rest of the guests. And then I think they showed a teaser. I don't know if you remember this, Dan, but they showed a teaser of Lois and Clark. There was like a 20-second teaser of this series that was about a year away from being released. And it was done like a kind of sort of early version of Sex and the City. And I remember the geezer had like a Superman tattoo on his arm, and that was all that was in it. You know what I mean? And everyone went fucking nuts. Yeah. They thought, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, now you can't turn the telly on without it being a superhero series.
Fucking superheroes, yeah.
I remember going home that day, like knackered on the train to South London, thinking, that's the best thing that ever happened to me. Like, you know, I got to meet this man whose comics I've been reading for as long as I could read, you know. And I got to meet him, and then there's a Superman TV series coming out as well. That's amazing.
Because I remember he was in that hall. We've talked about this before, but he was. Yeah. It was on the launch of Marvel 2099. So you had,
is that what it was?
Spider-Man, Ravage.
Yeah,
and he was talking about Ravage, saying that he was talking like emoting to the audience, saying, "Oh, like I wanted him driving around in a vehicle." Like Batman had like the Batmobile, and I wanted Ravage to have his, and it was like, what is the most intimidating car you see coming down the street? And everyone was sort of puzzling. He goes, "Oh, it's a garbage van or whatever it was," and everyone just laughed. And it's like, you're right there.
But I think maybe the rubbish men in England had a slightly different reputation from these middle of the night garbage men in America. I suppose it was sort of slightly horror sinister, weren't they?
Yeah, like in the States, obviously they're kind of a bit more of an intimidating figure, but like the bin men of the UK, it's kind of But upon reflection, those great big vans, you wouldn't want any part of that. But it didn't really kind of find traction with the audience, but.
But I think I might still have bought the first issue around that time. I think I bought like it was like a foil cover sort of thing going on, wasn't it? So,
I think I've got all the first three or four or five of most of the 2099s. Mm. Yeah. I think I carried on reading Spider-Man, then I just kind of wasn't really my cup of tea, so stopped it. But
I mean, that perfectly encapsulates that for me. He was a showman. He loved all that and like and presenting and. And just all of that kind of stuff. I know, he was definitely into that side of things, wasn't he? Like the public, being the public face of it.
Yeah.
He was like a ringmaster, wasn't he?
Yeah.
For me. Yeah.
And it was what was needed, because most comic people, certainly comic people in like the 60s and stuff, they were just in their offices, heads down, you know.
Working.
There weren't that many public faces like banging down the doors.
Oh no, not at all. And back then, we look at all these people today, and they're too cool for school. A lot of these creators, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, they're too busy taking selfies. That these guys would smoke a pipe, go in the office, write or draw something, you know, and go home. Yeah. And some of them were producing two or three books a month. You know.
Yeah.
There's none of this like fanning around, and it was just they were just working guys who had a great imagination, and you know
there was
worked
that
in
kind
publishing,
of
you know.
Illusion of the kind of the bullpen, wasn't it? Whenever I can remember seeing photos of like someone would get a tour of the Marvel Studios, and there would be a couple of actors dressed up as Cap and Spidey, and I was like, holy fuck, I would love to do that.
Yeah.
I just imagined a great big room of people sitting around. Talking about comics, drawing comics. I don't think it ever really worked out. It really was like that.
Yeah, there was very few of them who used to be there every day, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they used to sort of come and go a bit, didn't they? I think that was the thing. Yeah. I don't know what you mean. But he did. He was the guy who presented that image to us of them having this sort of amazing fun. It was like... Kirby parodied him, didn't he, in his Fourth World books as a guy called Funky Flashman. It was this sort of over-the-top... sort of ringmaster, you know, you could sell snake oil to the Indians, you know, that sort of kind of guy.
Yeah.
And there was an element of that, wasn't there? There was an element of the sort of cheeky sort of con man bit, you know, showman, you know, he'd front the circus, and he's full of alliterative, you know, shouting and stuff like that. It really was. Yeah. We're very positive.
We're touching this later, but I think you need someone like that, a positive role model and who can take it by the reins and show it for what it is
to be a public face. You certainly have to be that, just shout about the positives, don't you?
Yeah.
I agree completely.
And his way of speaking, his dialect and certainly in the writing as well, it bled into like the pop culture. It bled in, you know, I could read certain things, and certainly when you see a comic, one of the things I love about looking at like those old sort of Marvel books and stuff is seeing the credits of the artists and stuff, and the way they're described. It's always, you know, they're not just writer, artist, letterer.
Yeah,
you know, they're like,
we were sending them back and forth this week, weren't we? Who was it who sent me one? Said poor old Artie Seamick, because he's the letterer
I'll dig that up now because that made me laugh my ass off.
So because we're going to talk a little bit about our first impressions now we found Stan. How did you become first aware of him?
I can remember getting a school trip, and we had like taken us to a week to Italy. And we basically had to spend like better part of the fucking 2 days on a coach getting there. And when my mum said, I'll get something to read in the newsagent, which I'd end up reading multiple times because there wasn't fucking nothing else. And I bought Avengers Annual. It was Atlantis Attacks.
Oh, right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Just going through that and then seeing something at the end, like written by Stan, and then reading that over and over. And then just becoming so kind of enamored with all of the Marvel stuff, and it was kind of like a father figure to like the comics. I think where I was kind of more into Marvel, DC didn't seem to have that kind of figure sort of welcoming people into it. That's why I took to it more.
And I suppose as English fans, we almost warm to that sort of not a narrator but a host thing, because of stuff like Tharg and stuff like that. Kind of had that as well, didn't we? What was the one in Scream, Vince? Was it Ghoulie McNasty or something?
Definitely. Yeah, but that also had like that Crypt Keeper kind of voice, didn't it?
Yeah. So he almost formed that, didn't he? He was almost this larger than life caricature who would introduce the comics to you. And you know, Stan Lee Presents, you know, for example, we had that all the time, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, when I
was Face Front, True Believer, and you know,
yeah, when I was a kid, you know, I wasn't really aware of the names, as it were. You just caught up in the comics and the stories.
Yeah.
But certainly Stan Lee was something that sort of came up, because I think for me, thinking back, it was that, like the bullpen bulletins and stuff like that, the bits at the end where it was Stan talking to the reader, even though there might have been a story about, you know, from other creators and stuff. In a Marvel comic, you always got to that bit where Stan wrote something to the reader that you would read, and you know that, and that just kept sort of coming up, you know, every time I sort of read something like that. And mix that together with, like, obviously in the 80s by that time he was already more of a media personality.
His aim was, for donkey's years, is to get the movies made,
yeah,
you know, to get us in movies and TV, and that was kind of where he went. When, because Roy Thomas succeeded him, didn't he, as kind of editor-in-chief, famously. And Roy was very much a protege of his. And in fact, if you look at the Daredevil Season 3, Roy's in the background, isn't he? He's one of the prisoners in the cells, in the visiting room in the prison. And he sort of handed it out. I think from there, he kind of thought, right, we've got some amazing stuff here. I'm going to go to Hollywood and I'm going to start. I'm going to, like, bang the drum, which he did till he died, didn't he? Banged the drum and... And I remember seeing it I think it was probably the Spider-Man or X-Men. When that took off, I thought, he's finally done it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's done what he wanted to do there, you know.
Am I being crazy? And I'm probably wrong about this. Do you remember Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, that cartoon?
Yeah. He was in that. He narrated it.
Good. Yeah, that was the question I was about to ask. Yeah. I think that was the first sort of... Because I used to love Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yeah, I fucking loved that fucking cartoon.
And the way they lived together, and the way Iceman turned into Iceman by making that block of ice and punching out of it. You know, that... You know, you mix that with the comic books. I'm sorry, I'm a fan for life. But
it's my theory. They basically based Friends, the TV series.
I want to see that mashup.
I also remember kids like with the Secret Wars toys, and I was like, "Fucking hell, what are these?" And then like suddenly I didn't realize it was based on the comics. And then I started getting the comics off of that, and it was just great.
So, shall I read a couple of the comments from Facebook group?
Yes.
So we put a message out early in the week. Rory Donald, Reach Illustration, sent us a message. I think overall his huge enthusiasm helped ignite a lot of our interest. It's a bit oversimplified, but after being excited by the pretty pictures and bright colours, us creative types like moths to a flame, as a kid, it was always his way of including you as a reader. And his obvious joy of the product helped put a lot of us on the paths we now find ourselves on. Enough said. I think he's right about that, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's right. Yeah, completely.
And I think certainly that's in modern comics. It's missing that voice because obviously comics had, you know, bright colours, you know, fantastic characters from different creators. Stan wouldn't necessarily make the book, but then you'd have this figure that was always there to try and bring you in or to say, oh yeah, look at what we've got, this is amazing. And he'd make it, you know, including the reader or including the fan. Yeah.
And take nothing away from, say, Superman or Batman.
Yeah.
And they are great characters and I still read them to this day, but to me, they're strangers to me compared to someone like Spider-Man or Ben Grimm or Cyclops or someone like that, because I feel them as a personality more than I do.
Certainly, if you can sort of relate to Batman, you probably need to talk to someone because there's a lot of issues going on there.
Something like This Man, This Monster, you know, the thing episode, you're like, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
you know, you weren't getting that sort of emotion as much elsewhere for me.
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah. I said he kind of like made kind of the characters more real and relatable. Like he can relate to Spider-Man being a bit of a loser and things never really going his way. I remember having like an old Spider-Man annual where he had to fight the Vulture and he had like the flu or the cold and he just like he's absolutely fucked. But he had to keep on putting on this like tiny little costume and going out and fighting the Vulture because like he had to do it. And you can kind of relate to that, and the heroicism of it is. It really appealed to me at least as a kid.
I have to say, I know we'll get onto this in a minute, but Mauro and John Tucker both referenced that video of Stan talking to McFarland and Kill. And he actually at one point he says, "How long's it taken to put their costumes on?" All this going on, it must take them hours just to get changed to go and have a fight with someone. Yeah. And I thought if he said that now on the internet, people would accuse him of trolling Liefeld. Do you know what I mean? It's such a Stan way that you just had to agree with him. He was like poking holes in all their stupid, childish ideas. You're like,
There's another thing as well that when you'd be reading the comic and someone would do something and perhaps you weren't as well versed with the characters and what they do, and then there would be like a little note from Stan saying, "Don't worry, readers.
Yeah.
This is because of this," and it felt like he was kind of reading along with you as a guide and helping you over the rough bits.
And
it felt like the presence all the way through. Even thinking about it now, it's like that's really kind of quite touching help me through the getting through them.
I mean, in terms of a creator as well, like the stuff that he created or co-created for Marvel, and you see people do takes on these classic characters, but it always will revert down to its base core. Daredevil, you know, he's a blind lawyer, you know, he's got these abilities, but he has these very human faults. You know, Spider-Man has these problems. The X-Men, you talk about, you know, the racial connotations there, isn't there? In that time when that was happening, you know, Thor, the Hulk, you know, all of them, they had these different layers that that people will always revert back to. And that's the sign, you know, for a character to last a long time, the core has to be very, very strong.
The
very basis of it. People can do riffs on it, people can play on it, but if there isn't something decent to work from...
That iconic thing. It can be an emotion or a feeling or a look or anything like that, but it has to be a combination that's that... That sort of status quo has to be there, doesn't it? To shape everything else around it. And when he wrote Amazing Spider-Man until 100, issue 110. FF until issue 125. I mean, and that's nothing compared to the rest of the books he wrote. Always with that cohesive voice, you know, that one single. I know that the artists and I know people, the storytelling is a combination, it's a collaboration. But Stan was there for that. Yeah. You know, Stan wrote that.
I think, obviously I wasn't there at the time, but I think he made comics memorable in a time when they were seen as throwaway. There was very much, people make comics, they're funny books, you know, they're just read, you know, they were lower class, sort of, you know, seen as a certain form of entertainment, weren't they, or medium, just yeah. throwaway. And then you've got this guy just shouting about them and getting them out to the bigger public, and like really pushing that forward, you know, and that's yeah. that was revolutionary at the time.
I mean, and I think people don't give him enough credit for, and Marvel enough credit for, is the fact that the Marvel Universe is possibly the world's biggest interlocking narrative. It is literally a universe of thousands and thousands of storylines and characters that interlock into one huge universe. There's nothing else. You'd be hard pressed to think of something else that does that. DC, yeah, EastEnders or Coronation Street, they've been running a long time. But even they, they're only, you know, three or four times a week. But the DC was a collection of different companies and different characters that brought in to be a cohesive universe. But Marvel, from sort of 62 onwards, is this one large playing field, isn't it? It's like it's a game board, isn't it, with all these characters in it.
Yeah.
And when you think that that is still going now, it's an incredible achievement.
Yeah.
I know we had reboots and changes and stuff like that, but you're going to get that anyway, aren't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to bring up the films, but that's essentially why the films do so well, because these stories are all interlinked and they kind of keep pushing forward. And the characters, it's hard because like when the first, I remember seeing Mallrats and Stan Lee popped up. I was like, fucking hell, Stan Lee. That was great. But that, like, I can remember going to like the early Marvel ones when Stan Lee were making an appearance, and they kind of, oh, that's Stan Lee, and then you'd have to explain to someone who that was, to the point now when he pops up is
a bloke at work who's the nicest guy ever asked me why Hugh Hefner was in all the Marvel movies.
Isn't that reference somewhere in one of the films?
Yeah, he does. He plays him in, is it Iron Man 2 or 3? He actually plays Hugh Hefner, doesn't he? But he kind of, I think that might have been the first movie he saw. But yeah, I know what you mean about Mallrats, dude. When I saw Mallrats, I saw it in the pictures, and I saw it, and I thought, right, Stan's in it, good. And it's not a perfect movie, and Stan's not perfect in it, but with the love we have of Stan, we don't mind. And I actually at that point thought, from being like the fucking having the piss taken out of us for reading comics, we're about to win the world, and now Marvel movies are the world's biggest movies.
Yeah,
literally, we've won. It's only a shame that the comic numbers don't compare to that win. But we now win, don't we? You know, people will say to you, what's that Marvel movie like? Is that worth seeing? You know, they'll say that now, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Just going, before we get on to another batch of comments, going on to those wonderful ways that they introduce the creators in the comic, I found the picture I...
Oh, yeah, good, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you've got the credit box that we've seen in many a comic book, and this is a fantastic four issue. And as soon as I saw the credit box, I laughed out loud and had to share it. story by our leader, Stan Lee. Illustrations by our idol, Jack Kirby. Inking by our star, Joe Sinnott. Lettering by our letterer, Artie Simic.
Yeah. He's probably the hardest working of them all.
Yeah. The amount of lettering that boy had to do, but we'll talk about that in a bit.
By the way, I met Joe Sinnott. I never met Kirby, but I met Joe Sinnott in New York a few years ago, and he is like the nicest guy ever. He's like literally, I sat with him. I sat with him for about an hour while he drew me a Nick Fury, which I've got above my desk here, and he likes super nice. Yeah.
Amazing.
Okay, back to the comments. So after we put the shout out, I put a message about if you've got any saucy audio. I don't think we've got any audio to play, but Pete Watson, Peter, what's going on?
We're genuinely worried.
Yeah, well, you are wearing sunglasses to hide your identity. Pete, he said, no saucy audio. We'll do have a visual tribute to Stan. And you know, there's that famous picture of Stan naked with, I think it's the Batman versus the Hulk Treasury Edition. Obviously, it would have to be Stan. You know what I mean? Covering his bits. And Pete has recreated that scene on his couch. Thanks, Pete.
Nice one.
Yeah. Oh, good. We didn't get flagged by Facebook, so I think we're fine.
No, yeah.
I've seen worse stuff on Facebook.
Yeah. And then Drew Hurd sent us a lovely message in. Thanks, Drew. You put it on the board, and I think it's worthy of reading out. When I was a kid, I grew up reading the Beano. As I got older, I was bullied a lot for the way I looked, and I started reading Spider-Man, partly to escape, but partly as he was someone I could relate to. Mm. And I found myself having someone to turn to when I was unhappy. I met Stan at three different comic conventions, and he was always gracious. He spoke with such passion, the times I saw him, he always remembered to share the credit with those he worked with. His past may be controversial, but it can be said without his ideas, the face of comics would be spectacularly different. And he's right there, Drew. Thanks for that, man.
Yeah.
That's a really heartfelt
really
message.
Good, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And he included a little picture of himself with Stan, which is great. Yeah. Well done, mate. Nice one. Mm. That's really good. Mike West, Stan's influence to me is how he permeated in almost every type of media and his unique voice and tone. From the comics and Stan's soapbox to his voiceovers on video games and cartoons and then appearing in TVs and film. It made me realise and see that you don't have to limit yourself to one creative outlet or pursuit and to approach everything with an enthusiasm and genuine love of what you're doing. Mm. So that's right point. And that is that cross-media appeal, which is what he went for, is what he wanted to do. He wanted Marvel Comics to be known to the world, and is why he's in Spider-Man's Amazing Friends. And I don't play video games, but I'm sure he will have appeared in a few of them, is he? Or
I can remember playing a couple of games with him having a voiceover in it. I can't recall which ones.
Right, yeah.
He I don't have to Google it now.
And I know that he was in, I think he was in the last ever episode. Do you remember the Spider-Man animated show?
Oh, was he in that, is he? Okay.
The last ever episode, I think. Spider-Man meets his creator, as it were.
Okay. I know he appears in a few comics as well. So he's in that FF issue, isn't he? Him and Kirby, like, wandering around in the background, which I kind of liked. Yeah. You know. I don't want them to be remembered as a pair who fell out. I don't know why. I'm a bit of an old softy like that. I want them to be remembered like that, you know. Mike went on to say, I always see a lot of people begin a post about themselves with sorry about the shameless plug. And I always try and approach promotion and marketing like Stan and Gene Simmons, but don't hold it against me. And if you truly believe in what you're doing and proud of what you've created, there should be no shame in sharing it with the world. Which is what he did, isn't it? You know, he banged the drum for Marvel, didn't he? Shamelessly, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that broke my heart a little bit, is that people didn't focus in enough on the comics when he passed away. We just got montages of his, you know, his appearances in movies and stuff nonstop. And I think, okay.
He was in Big Hero 6.
Okay.
He's like, there's one character who doesn't have, well, he kind of doesn't really have a talent, but then his dad is Stan Lee and he's got this comic memorabilia and stuff. But there's so much stuff in there. I didn't realize he had voice stuff in. Like the 1982 Incredible Hulk, Jay and Silent Bob's super groovy cartoon movie.
Yeah.
Teen Titans Go to the Movie.
Right.
God, there's loads. Yeah, it's absolutely loads.
Yeah.
But in the games, he's like the Amazing Spider-Man, all the Spider-Man games, Marvel Superheroes, Marvel Ultimate Alliance, Lego Marvel games. Yeah, he's done a lot. I was surprised how much there is. So nice of him.
Yeah, it's one hell of a legacy the man had.
He also said, look, Papa Smurf and Mad 2013, Papa Smurf, episode 83. So fucking that.
I'll read a couple more. John Otway, like most people, I first heard about Stan through his comic book creations. For me, it was Spider-Man. It does seem to be Spider-Man that everyone really latches to, doesn't it? That's interesting.
I think at the age when people were getting into it, like Spider-Man, it's very easy relatable because you're kind of... Who can't kind of associate with an awkward teen trying to get on?
It wasn't just his cool abilities that I liked, but the fact that away from saving people, he had chores and homework, things that I had to do too. Realistically, being a superhero is impossible, but no one made them more relatable than Stan. Yeah, he's right. That's a perfect encapsulation of it for me. No matter how great a comic book creator was, he will always be a better person. Enough said. Yeah, that's right. I still say enough said now. I say it at work.
I say it. Yeah, I use it.
I reckon pretty much anyone could write, if you got any kind of artistic bent, and as Tony mentioned, like, people who can tell jokes are great storytellers. Who couldn't tell a Hulk story? Who hasn't fucking lost their temper at something or another?
Yeah, yeah. There was, is it Phil McFarlane posted that Reeves and Mortimer one about the sort of guy... How much are your macaroons?
There's a bit in The Young Ones where Neil fucking turns into the Hulk. Do you remember that episode?
I can't remember that one.
The Young Ones, and they're taking the piss out of him, and then he turns into the Hulk and just fucks them all up. It's great.
I mean, these are undeniable sort of like footprints on pop culture, aren't they? I mean, we talk about this medium we love, and you know, sequentials and comics, but a lot of it is in jokes. No matter how much, you know, no matter how popular your comic is at the time, or the series you're reading, or anything like that, a lot of the jokes you have with your friends and stuff are in jokes. There's not much that will pass.
Which is what he did with us, wasn't it? He really did that. Yeah. You know, you really got that when he was chatting about stuff.
Yeah.
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 So Gary Watson, G-Man. I think like most, I was drawn to some of Stan's characters without really knowing at the time they were from Stan the Man. I had Spider-Man and other comics when I was young, but I never really read and took notice of them until I was about 12 or 13, which meant that a high school geek like Parker seemed to just ring true with me. That snowballed pretty quickly into the wider comic world, but Spidey stuck with me. Cap became the next creation of his that caught my attention. He didn't create Cap, Gary. It caught my attention, and my interest in them both was probably been a wrestling match over the years between the two. For me, the fact these characters started as your less than unusual hero type formed a connection with me. Up until then, comics had always been a solitary thing to do with a definite line between you and the characters, whereas there seemed to be more like you. They seemed to be more like you, and it became less of a solitary pursuit. He's exactly right there.
Yeah,
it's that inclusion factor that Stan works so well on it, isn't it? Mm, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting actually, because Stan's first comics work was he was a text piece, because I think Simon and Kirby created Captain America, but his first ever work was fiction work of some kind, was at Timely in 1941. Stan's first work at Marvel got released as a text story called Captain America Foils the Traitor's Revenge. So, you know, they sometimes had little sort of short stories, didn't they, in comics and annuals and stuff like that, and it was like that, and it was in Captain America Comics number 3, May 1941.
Okay.
All right. And that was the first time he used the pen name of Stan Lee, in case anyone found out he wrote comics.
Heaven forbid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then that's exactly what we're doing. We don't want anyone to know a great comics. No. That works. I noticed nobody's interested. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then 2 issues later, he wrote a backup comic story headline. It was called Headline Hunter Foreign Correspondent. His first superhero co-creation was the Destroyer in Mystic Comics number 6, August 1941. Who's recently appeared in a miniseries, well, this recently, about 10 years ago, that Kirkman wrote, which is well worth searching out. Sort of golden age hero that he brought back, yeah. And he went on to create Jack Frost and a character called Father Time around that time. Yeah, interesting.
What interests me, they, you know, like the first issue of Fantastic Four, they were wearing street clothes. I kind of, like you said, I wanted to make like ordinary people. But not about the costume. I realised that that was perhaps an overstep, and it's like, look, you can do real people in superhero costumes. You don't have to have them wearing like a brown jacket or whatever.
Yeah.
And they saw that kind of quick course correction, and then, like, as we all know, it was on to gold there.
Mm. Yeah, and I think to be fair, the Fantastic Four was Challengers of the Unknown, wasn't it? With a more sort of family atmosphere thing going on, wasn't it? Really. And then when they started getting their costumes and stuff, they began to sort of morph into their own identity a bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the Fantastic Four is, out of all of them, that's the quintessential Stan Lee book for me.
Okay,
personally.
Interesting, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I know lots of people could pick, like, you know, probably say Spider-Man or the Hulk or X-Men or whatever. But for me, it's the Fantastic Four, I think. When I think Fantastic Four, I think Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And there's rarely... I don't think there's anyone else that any other series that I think of, like, you know, has such
stance on it.
Mm.
It's almost like that's the basis for the Marvel Universe that grew out of them.
Yeah.
I kind of feel a little bit like that.
Yeah.
It was such a strong run, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Well, essentially, because they succeeded, it allowed the others to kind of branch off from what that concept of the kind of the everyday person.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than being these sort of stoic characters that felt no fear or just went out action.
Yeah.
Do you want to? Should we segue into that? Because I think we're going to split it into three, and this was the next section, and we can go back to some of the comments from the Facebook page in a minute as well. But what I did is I gifted you guys some of the some FF. It was an FF volume. Basically, a Fantastic Four volume from the original run of Jack and Stan, and it was, I think it was 44 to 50, and there was an annual in the end of it.
Yeah.
For anyone who remembers that. Now, that's like kind of for me, just classic FF period. Mm-hmm. And it rolls from, there's kind of three separate, maybe four separate big stories in that. So it starts off with the Frightful Four. Medusa is obviously a member of the Frightful Four. It morphs in, it rolls straight on into the Inhumans storyline, the Great Refuge, and it rolls straight on from that into the probably my favourite FF story, which was the coming of Galactus and the arrival of the Silver Surfer. And then it runs straight on from that into, is it the wedding in the annual at the end? I can't remember now. Is it the Sue Reed wedding? I think it might be. Yeah. So it's, when you think that is, how many ideas there in what?
There's fucking loads.
Yeah.
The whole introduction of the Inhumans and then like Galactus off the back of that.
Yeah.
Just, fucking hell.
Yeah. And he doesn't stop to breathe, does he? There's no like, oh, right, now
I mean, the comics themselves don't give you space to breathe, do they? I mean, the ones that sort of drowned me, as it were, as I was reading them, was the Inhuman storyline, you know, because there's so much going on, you know, and there's so much being introduced and talked about, and, you know, their plot lines, what's going on with the Fantastic Four, you know, all these different creatures and their... You know, the classic
designs.
The classic comics miscommunication of the bad guy. You know, the good guys who think the bad guys are the good guys. Or that
kind of classic Marvel as well. Yeah. I don't think DC did it quite as much, did they? But two good guys fighting each other was just like a big thing they did, wasn't it? You know,
it was always the good way to introduce a new character, wasn't it? It was just to have them fighting.
The Fantastic Four usually in this run, at least, they're always on the back foot. They're never kind of like...
They never know what's going on, do they? Considering Reed is like a genius, he has no idea what's going on.
He's like... they're sort of hanging on by their fingertips of like, fucking hell, all this shit's happening.
Yeah.
And what makes you laugh is when they say, oh, Johnny, look, you've had a hard time. Just rest. And they go, yeah, lay down. And then it's like, oh, what about so-and-so? I haven't fucking been out of her in ages. And then rings her up. And then on the way over there, something else kicks off. And then you're away again.
I love the fact in probably one of the biggest fucking issues ever in comics is issue 50 of the Fantastic Four. And it's the main page is titled The Startling Saga of the Silver Surf. And you think, fuck me, I'm in for some fun here. And then in the bottom right hand corner, it also has another sort of storyline that it features is at last, the Human Torch goes to college. And you're like,
right.
The Earth's about to be destroyed. And he's gone to college as well, so I'm glad about that.
Because there's an episode when he's kind of like walking around the street. I can't remember what issue it is. And then he sees, is it Crystal from the Inhumans?
He had a big hard on for her, didn't he?
Yeah, just standing in the alley. It's like, oh, she's amazing. And then she disappears. And then for some reason, like, he is absolutely mad in love with her. And she has, like, more than just an affection for him. And it's like, you've barely spoken to each other. It's just this love affair's like popped out of nowhere. But, I think it was kind of like they kind of went from action and they were like, right, we've got to jam some fucking romance in.
I know what you mean. And I don't think he gets enough credit, Stan and Jack, for that sort of romance angle, because you really felt for the Thing and Alicia, didn't you, throughout?
He's kind of talking to he's standing on the roof and Alicia comes over and starts talking to the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, fuck, man. Like, she's choosing that kind of like silver god over me. And
yeah. I remember reading that and thinking that when I was a kid, thinking, oh, don't leave him.
Yeah.
What are you doing? And then there's a whole scene. I mean, there's a slightly the mores of the 60s do shine through, and we're probably talking that in a bit. But there's a bit where he sort of breaks into her house, the Silver Surfer, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And so she makes him tea.
Yeah. It's great.
And he says, what's all this weirdness? I'm not going to eat food. I'm going to absorb it through my cosmic powers. And she goes, oh, okay.
She just like just blasts it into energy. And
But then, I mean, reading that as a volume, and it's only six comics or seven comics with an annual, is the iconic moments. You've got Galactus arriving. You've got his ship on top of that tower block sucking the energy out of the Earth. You've got the appearance of Uatu, the Watcher. Like, fucking hell, all these ideas. You've got the Inhumans, you've got the Frightful Four, you've got Medusa, you've got all of the Great Refuge, which is where they go to meet them, don't they? I don't know how they land that plane, I'll be honest with you. Yeah. They've got like a 747, they just sort of land it in a gully, don't they, at one point.
It's
It's amazing. You've got the Silver Surfer with Alicia. And one of the main storylines for the whole thing is you've got Sue Storm trying to get attention from Reed and Reed doing her haircut.
That's fucking ace. That's great. There's so many moments where they kind of like don't do give Sue Storm justice.
Yeah. Like, she's like the most powerful one of them all when you look at it. You know what I mean?
Everything's kicking off. Like the fucking room's blowing up. And she goes, oh, remember you're my husband or something. And he sort of rebukes her. So, like, come on, woman, we've got no time for this. And it's
like, yeah. I mean, sometimes you read it now and you think, Reed's an arsehole, isn't he?
Yeah. No wonder she rang off with Namor. He must have smelt a fish. But, you know, it must have been a better option.
But that story that Bruce mentioned today, they're going to the Great Refuge and everything's up in the air. It's fucking dangerous. They don't know what's going on. And then she decides to do her hair in a different, like, part on the way to the journey. And then they're walking around this sort of this landscape. They don't know what's going on. There could be danger everywhere, threat around every corner. And Sue's disappeared, and they start freaking out, like, where the fuck's Sue?
Yeah.
And she turns up, like, I was invisible because you, like, weren't paying attention to me. And look, I've got this new hairstyle. And you're like, oh, okay. Slightly narcissistic.
I think she's, I wrote it down. Perhaps a new hairstyle will make him realise I'm not just one of the boys.
It's like they've been under relentless siege for like hours. But like, they don't give it justice in much. Like they're falling down a chasm, and she makes like a kind of a bouncy kind of invisible thing for her to land on. And things like, oh, well done, Suze. And she's like, yeah, Reed told me to do it. But that, you couldn't give her that. Just give her no idea. But
it's almost like you feel like someone's going to say, put the kettle on, sweetheart.
Yeah,
you think that's coming, don't you?
Yeah,
I'm not doing him down because that was the times were different. Yeah, it's not right, but you know, I don't know.
That comic is an accurate representation of social the way shit went on. Obviously, when we weren't getting a great shake of the deal back then, but yeah, it seemed a bit overly written at times. Poor old Sue got
The other thing I know that I'd completely forgotten about is the first appearance of the Punisher.
Oh,
do
really?
Do you notice that Galactus has got a cyborg attack dog?
Oh, yeah.
And it's called the Punisher, and I'd completely forgotten about that.
Oh, word.
Yeah.
Do you think that was one of those things where they used the name and then they didn't really use it for anything, so they decided to recycle it?
Yeah, they've probably forgotten about it. Yeah. Or just, oh, let's reboot it in a different way. He's not a cyborg from outer space anymore. Yeah. He's just an ex-army vet, yeah.
Because there's one issue where Medusa's kind of, they caught the rest of the Frightful Four, and Medusa sort of like sidles up to Johnny. Again, she sort of almost falls in love with Reed after he's caught, and Johnny. She's like, takes a shine to them because they're good looking. Yeah. But like, there's this dude fucking coming after me called like the Gorgon. And then the Gorgon, it's Gorgon, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he just, like, he's like got a really powerful kit. He turns up, just fucks up the Fantastic Four. Kicks the ass of Dragon Man, who's like one of the kind of top tier kind of kick-ass characters in it, and then just fucks off, and you're like, bloody hell, okay. It's they've really done the kind of villains well in that, and
they did. But it rolled straight through, and even Pace Pot Pete is actually quite frightening. There's the villains in it, you think, oh, he could do the whole, like Gorgon, who'd have thought it, especially off that fucking terrible TV series Gorgon. I forgot that he was in it. But, you know, he's actually got a real presence to him, isn't he? Yeah. Even Medusa, whose power is basically she can control her hair.
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, she's something. You know, it's like that, isn't it?
But it's like touches that Stan Lee in there, like we mentioned earlier, when he kind of like guides you along. There's a bit with Johnny. They've got the Johnny's got the Frightful Four bang to rights, and she stands by the door and gets her hair to go into like a sink with a load of water. And as Johnny flies up, her hair kind of grabs him and like douses his flame, and like, there's a little note from Stan that says, look, this wouldn't happen normally, it's just that Johnny was really knackered. So seeing that, like, oh no, that wouldn't fly, he would fucking burn her hair off. But he obviously, like, yeah, he smooths over that crack. Yeah.
He had to call on the other member, the secret member, the hairdryer to come and sort her out.
Well, I mean, because when Stan was writing it as well, you know, that famous Marvel method, wasn't it, that was used where
explain that for people who want to be too familiar with that.
Yeah, so do you want to explain it, Vic?
Well, the way I think about it, and this is probably wrong, so correct me, Tony, but it's like the writer gives the artist a basic plot, of this is what's going to happen in the issue. The artist then essentially does all of that, plots all that out and all the action and stuff. And then the writer comes in to basically fill in the words and the speech bubbles.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it was done in various different ways. So some writers would send the artist a plot structure or even, you know, sometimes a page breakdown, as I understand it, from some of the other writers.
But they wouldn't do any dialogue, would they? It would just...
Yeah, exactly. Mm. They might say this is an argument or this is, you know what I mean? And I think, to be fair, Stan and Jack had this relationship where he would ring him and say, right, they're going to the, he was going to get invaded by this character called Galactus. Because I think famously Stan created the Silver Surfer, didn't he? Jack created the Silver Surfer by, and Stan said, who's that character? And he went, oh, it's just somebody I drew. And he went, right, that's great. You know, and he became one of the greatest characters ever. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Stan's writing style, we'll talk about that in a minute as well, is really something. You know, it's all had that. Even as a kid, I thought, this is a guy trying to be quite hip, and I'm not sure if he is or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was a little bit of that.
There was a synchronicity to Stan and Jack's thinking, though. I mean, like, Stan knew that if I give this to Jack, Jack will do it.
He will
absolutely smash it, and he'll give me something to work with. Do you know what I mean? Because when you say that Marvel method, the artist definitely has to think about what's going to be in those speech bubbles or what's going to be said.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And there's a lot of writing on some of these Fantastic Four pages. They are quite heavily written.
So much writing, a lot of
like,
it.
I really think, like, looking back at it now, like, a lot of it could just be chopped because it's really superfluous. So, oh no, Johnny Storm's flying away. So, well, that's, you can see that in the panel.
I think you could chop a bit of it, couldn't you? But it's what it was. Exactly.
And of course, exactly these were the days where thought bubbles were a predominant thing as well, you know. So as well as speech bubbles, narration bubbles, and if you had all the characters on a page, like, just say I'm looking at one page, which is the beginning of an issue, Beware the Hidden Land. You've got six characters on this page. Every single one of those characters says something at the seemingly, if that was one moment in time, if a panel was capturing that one moment in time, six people are all talking at the same time.
Yeah.
As well as, like, there's a sort of narration box to get the reader up to speed with what's going on. So there's a lot going on in a lot of these issues, which makes them a dense read. I mean, Tony, I know you said it's like, it's only like six issues or whatever, this collection. It's a hefty read. It is,
isn't it? But I think it's six issues in that volume that would be either just one of those storylines would be a Marvel event that would be across 20 issues now.
Discovering
the Inhumans would be a Marvel event. Galactus coming to Earth and trying to destroy it would be a Marvel event, and you'd have to read three trades to get through that, but Stan and Jack manage it in three issues.
Well, even if he was going to plot the Galactus event in like a normal run of the comics, at the end of the first issue I would have the Surfer turning up. So like, you've got that much room to play with, like the build up and everything, and it maybe it'd span over four or five issues of them kind of dealing with Galactus, but bang it out like in what they do is just hammering along.
And also, it's something that I think is overlooked a lot of the time, all of these new characters, all these major storylines, and it's the Fantastic Four. There's no one else coming up to back them up. There's nothing else. It's all them. That is, for me, that's unheard of in modern comics now, because I don't think there's enough confidence in the characters to do two issues, three issues of a major threat without involving at least some other character that people know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's a confidence in the Fantastic Four being able to, A, deal with this threat, and also share the page with these major things that are being introduced, aren't they? You know, because the Fantastic Four are a major thing. You know, do you know what I mean? But you're still reading, you're still finding out about, I don't know, something small like the Inhumans. You know,
there's a whole industry built on the Inhumans now. Yes. There's a TV, there's about four series come out in the last year. You know, there's a whole thing on them now.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's fascinating to me, like, seeing that, you know, how, I mean, in modern times, the Fantastic Four are starting to sort of work, they're trying to get back to the prominence of Marvel.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because they're kind of like, I know what you mean. They're kind of the mother and the father of the universe now for me. They always have been. You know, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But to me, back then, as a kid, you'd like, and this applied to me as a kid because I was reading a lot of the reprints of the Jack Kirby and Stan stuff in the black and white magazines, is I would get maybe 2-3 comics a month, and they would just be my comics, and that would be what I'd want to read. So back then, you'd be reading the Fantastic Four, and you just want to read the Fantastic Four. If suddenly it started spinning off into fucking 34 other titles, you'd have to say to your dad, can I have these? And he'd go, no, can't afford to get you all these other comics. You know,
yeah.
And the Fantastic Four would be your comic. It would be a personal thing to you. You wouldn't have to go and read Spider-Man or the Avengers or Daredevil or something to keep up with what was going on with them.
Yeah.
And I think that's where stuff like Secret Wars started the drip of ruining us, you know. I mean, Stan obviously pumped the other books by mentioning them and, you know, writing a very sort of beautiful prose and literative prose in the bullpen bulletins and stuff like that about what else is going on in the Marvel Universe. But you didn't feel you had to read Thor to know what was going on in the Fantastic Four. And I just think that's nicer for me.
Mm. I think the only thing with the sequel was obviously it was like a self-contained title, and then they all went back to the kind of thing. Maybe it's a good way of introducing...
Yeah, maybe Secret Wars 2, I suppose, was more of a... where they realised, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not a massive fan of that because I remember, you know, the death of Superman. For some reason, it wasn't one of the comics jumped out, and it was in a Green Lantern issue. And the retailers didn't fucking know that. And suddenly, like, there's a part of the story that you can't get because it suddenly a Superman story's popped into a Green Lantern one, and like, it's like, oh, fuck's sake.
Yeah.
But I'm not a mad fan of it at all. I really don't like it.
Yeah, it gets you tired of it all sometimes, you know, that sort of the next Marvel event. I it's a big Marvel event coming, there's another thing happening at the moment, isn't it? They're all saying, oh, there's another Marvel event, it's going to change the whole universe and all this sort of thing. And they're dripping out a little bit of information daily on it, aren't they? And if you've seen Newsarama recently, it's going they're talking about rebooting the Marvel Universe is the rumour that's going around. And I'm like, oh, please don't.
Right, don't do that.
I just want a Daredevil comic. I want an Iron Fist comic. I want to read a Captain America comic without having to fanny around with all this nonsense. You know,
just
want to read about my favourite characters and on the bus, you know,
getting
up
to their adventures and stories. And like, for like when say someone's got like some really good storyline on the go, and then suddenly it gets fucking hijacked because they've got to appear in some big event. So it just fucks it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, well, this is all building. The guy's building the story here, the author, whatever, writer. And then suddenly you have to jam in this fucking event story that's got nothing really to do with the character. And then sometimes it fucks the previous one up, or it's like just a blip, and then they just carry on like it didn't happen.
Yeah, and occasionally it works. You know, there's the Spider-Man appeared in the early Captain America issues, and I kind of, you know, he fights the Falcon. You think, oh, that's exciting, didn't know?
Yeah,
that's really. And it builds this history up by now, but I couldn't tell you how many times Spider-Man's met the Falcon now. It's just a mess. Yeah. Mm. And when we talk about that in a minute, we're moving on. We've been a bit negative there. So I read another comment out.
Yeah.
So Monty Nero commented, in a way that the most influential character that Stan created was himself. He had such a unique voice, whether in editorial, narration, dialogue, or in person. Not only... but his depiction of the Marvel bullpen from 1961 onwards as a happy, hip studio of youthful artists and writers working together as a wisecracking family was incredibly influential. Most fans and creators wanted to be part of that or to create their own version. It was a magical and inspiring work of fiction, rivaling anything within the comics themselves. The artists in 61 were freelance and worked elsewhere, popping in maybe once a week or month. The youngest was 39, neither hip nor young, and often didn't speak or agree with the stories in question. Most people would still love to be part of that bullpen, but it never existed in the way that people imagined. Stan was a genius at what he did, as inspired and as productive as Ditko and Kirby were. Without them all working together, the Marvel we know and love would simply not exist. Exactly right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's that sort of fallacy of this, you know, this happy rumour of all smoking cigars and, you know, going and... Stan even did a fucking single. Have you ever heard the Merry Marching Society?
No.
Marching Society. They did a fucking single. And I think Steve Ditko said, I'm not going to be in that. So they'd say, Stunning Steve Ditko, whatever he was called, he's outside. He won't come in at the moment and sing with us. Will he, Jack? And Jack goes, oh, no, I can see him through the window. And it's like madness, you know. It made you feel included somehow, you know. It's crazy.
I always remember being a kid reading about the No Prize. I did that fucking pun went over my head for fucking years and years.
But you got a postcard, didn't you?
Oh, right. Okay. I thought you didn't
get a feeling.
I thought you got fuck all. That was the joke of it.
I've got a feeling you got something. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I've got a feeling you got a no-prize postcard or something like that, yeah. Philip McFarland, he became the most famous person in comics. Easy, I'd say. Not even close when it comes to those who started in comics. He's way bigger than Gerard Way, obviously, or Anthony Bourdain. Yes, he is. His impact is seen even in comics listed as Stanley Presents in the 90s. It might have been a one-horse race with only DC and struggling at that, probably. Got to respect him and what he did, even if you're James Hunt like me, who's on the side of Jack and Steve. I changed the word there. The word in that one. Sorry, Philip. Yeah, but okay. Yeah, cool. Yeah, he was a big character. Dan White. The thing that I realised as I got older was that Stan never talked down to his readers.
No,
he'd never use a simple word when a fancier one was available. He revelled in alliteration, metaphor, and simile, often to ludicrous degrees. His prose was the purplest, but to a young, eager readers, that was part of the charm. You could guarantee that any Stan comic would send you scurrying for a dictionary to find out what that new word meant. He was a great populist storyteller. That he was, wasn't he? Populist is an underrated term. And he also taught us how much fun words could be. His love of language was, I think, an even greater gift than the characters he helped to create. That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, he was totally hip and alliterative, wasn't he? And he was simultaneously sort of old-fashioned in some of his sensibilities, but also progressive in stuff, wasn't he? You know, there was that old-fashioned Mad Men, you wear a shirt and a tie and a hat on the way to work, but there was also that sort of hip side of things where he famously said, "Oh, we don't care about the comics code. We're doing this issue on Spider-Man about his friend who's on drugs and stuff like that." Yeah. There was a real progressive.
It's always
feeling
sort of
to him,
open and to new ideas and the new things that were coming along, and very accepting of change and the youth of what they were doing and supportive as well.
Yeah,
I always got that from Marvel and Stan. Regardless of how he did feel, which I don't entirely know or sure of, but I always got that feeling of inclusion and.
But there's certain messages that get put across, aren't there, into the sort of media that, you know, that people can take to heart. For instance, what I think we got a few Twitter messages, and one of them is Matthew Craig, and he said, "Great power equals great responsibility. It has never been about walking up walls or wearing tights for me. It's always been about understanding that I'm not alone in this world, that my actions have consequences, and that I can choose to make them as beneficial as possible, even at personal cost." And it's those sort of messages, isn't it? I mean, great power comes great responsibility. Everyone knows that, don't they? You know, it goes beyond the character. It's not just a Spider-Man thing. It's just, you know, it's those sort of messages are what we need sometimes, I think.
If everyone had those, the morality of what Stan preached and talked about in his comics, we'd live in a fantastic utopia.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Yeah. And he took chances. People forget how much he took chances with storylines, like killing George Stacy, and then after killing her dad, he then kills her, you know, essentially a few issues later, really. As in, you know, steps like that, you've got, you know, a character who's been in it for ages, years, and then suddenly you're going to kill her off and stuff. It's really interesting the way he did stuff.
Yeah,
I read some Spider-Mans this week. I really think the John Romita Spider-Men stand up, and to me personally, more than the Ditko ones, is readable as a real sort of soap opera thing. And I was reading Spider-Man 106, and there's a line it just made me. There's a couple of lines that made me chuckle that Stan wrote, and his mate's having problems with a girl, and Spidey as Peter Parker says to him, "Look, I'm no Dear Abby, but with some chicks, you can just try too hard."
Sage advice.
And then he goes to a party, and he says, "Hey, that pizza smells out of sight." Yeah. And then he says to Gwen Stacy, "Gwendy, why do you look so voomy?" So that's a phrase we don't use enough these days. Yeah.
Well, I had to Google it. Voomy. As something that the Thing says in the Fantastic Four. I tweeted it to you. Right. I sent it to you guys earlier. What's the word?
Piker.
Was it Piker?
Piker, yeah. It says that guy makes Doctor Doom seem like a piker. And I was like, well, what the fuck's that? And it's like someone who doesn't gamble high on bets, takes very small bets.
Oh, okay.
So, so he was saying Doctor Doom's a bit of a bitch.
Well, I got a couple more tweets before we move on to the big question, do you think?
Yeah, I've got two or three more as well on this side. So
yeah,
you,
okay,
you do yours, man.
Andy Ewington, our previous guest a couple of weeks ago, he said, "A bit of trivia. In my debut graphic novel at 45, the main hero's first name is Stanley. Wink. Mm.
Yeah.
Cool. Destination Venus. I own a comic shop. Nuff said. And for me, Andy CT, obviously Andy from Horde Comics, he says, and this goes back to something that I mentioned, I think I picked out from what Andy said, actually. I think I first learned who Stan Lee was when he had a cameo in the final episode of the Spider-Man animated series.
Before
the movie took off, I saw an interview with Kevin Smith and was taken in by his energy and passion for comics and characters. Finally, his advice on writing is probably one of the reasons I'm doing it today. Simple, inspiring, and effective. Nuff said. And he's got an image of a Stan just sort of saying, the only advice anybody can give is, if you want to be a writer, keep writing and read all you can. Read everything.
Yeah. You know. We've had a few people now, haven't we?
Yeah.
Say that. Yeah. Have you seen that interview that Kevin Smith does with him? I think it's out on DVD. I've got it somewhere here.
Years ago, I think I've watched that.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I'll tell you where I like seeing his interview as well, is in Search of Steve Ditko with Jonathan Ross.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a really good one.
And Stan, for a moment there, steps away a little bit from his sort of outrageous personality, and you get, I hate to call it a moment of truth because I don't think he was a liar to us, but you just get this sort of pensive and thoughtful guy for a second where he says to him, who created Spider-Man? And Stan says, well, I came up with the name. I came up with the idea. And he says, and it's this really interesting moment. And I kind of believe him when he says that. It's really worth watching both those documentaries. Kevin Smith loves him. He's good since More Rats and stuff like that. But
If there's any links, if there's anything on YouTube or whatever, we'll put some links in the show notes.
Yeah.
Some good videos to watch once you finish.
Yeah, Marrow's written in and said about this. He says there's nothing else he can really add to it. The language he or someone else used to introduce each issue was always good fun. Nevertheless, demonstrated a great deal of enthusiasm for the product. This is a novelty aspect, which is sadly a miss from the American mainstream at the moment. And then he includes the Stanley Owns YouTube video where he meets McFarland and Liefeld, and it's just, you've got to watch it. It's entitled Stanley Owns Him, and he does. He just, he's like, you're playing at it, guys.
That whole video.
But he's not horrible to them, you know.
No. Nah, that whole video, you keep expecting Stan to, like, look at the office, look at the camera, like, in the office. There's the sort of, the sort of show that he knows what's going on.
I remember watching that, and Rob Liefeld sort of designing a character on the page, isn't he?
Yeah,
and I remember looking at it just thinking, the fuck is that character?
Yeah,
I know. He's got these like huge shoulder pads and all this sort of thing going on. And Stan's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
B. Muir, who I was chatting to earlier, actually, he's proper dude. He organised our art swap. I sent you my art that I did.
That's great.
That's
brilliant, dude.
I had to double check that Tony had done it. Because I was like, you did this. It's all right.
Oh, that's trust, isn't it? That's faith. I had faith in you,
really
Tony.
Good.
It's a little bit. It's not good. I think. Thanks for saying it. But it's a sort of autobiographical moment in my life that I think I've got an idea who's going to get it. So yeah. So we're doing that swap. Is it Christmas Eve? We're doing that swap, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that. I almost want to put it because it just made me giggle, and it took me fucking ages. Don't know how you lot do it. I only drew four panels, and it was the same picture in all four of them. Almost it took me fucking ages, and I coloured it in. Mr. Muir says, my first memory of Stan was watching Spider-Man His Amazing Friends on TV. It always start with Stan spouting out greetings, true believers, in a way that made me think that he was talking directly to me. And that's perfect, isn't it? That's exactly what he was doing. He was speaking to us, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then Philip McFarlane mentions the Just Imagine Stan Lee books, which came out a few years ago. I spoke to Dave Gibbons about this quite a few years ago, and he did the Green Lantern off the top of my head. I've got it over there. And I think they're bringing out like a hardback of it all, haven't they? So it's basically Stan creating the DC universe in how Stan would have done it if he'd have done it, you know, something. Yeah. And I said to Dave, what are you doing that for? And he went, I just wanted to work with Stan. I wanted to say I'd work with him. And he, I thought, that's nice. Dave's he's a really interesting guy. And, you know, obviously a huge talent. But he says it as it is. And I really like that he said that, you know. Yeah, so he's a big fan. Yeah, that's the stuff off the Facebook. There you go. We got anything more off the Twitter, V?
I don't think so. No, that I can see. There probably is not. I've probably missed out. God knows how many.
Yeah.
That's what happens when we record early.
I've got a little, just as a little sort of extra, some books I think people might enjoy reading if they want to get into Stan. Obviously, the Galactus trilogy that starts in Fantastic Four 48 with Jack. I would try the early Captain Americas from 117 onwards. You got starts off with Stan and Gene Colan, and they introduce the Falcon, and that's a great little series, you know. It leads on to John Romita drawing some excellent Captain America and Falcon books. Mm. The Amazing Spider-Man 96 to 98 is the drug storyline, which Gil Kane and John Romita drew, and is still extremely readable. Anything around that period, from about 30, Amazing Spider-Man 30 onwards, is just like this amazing soap opera. And if you can get the black and white essentials, it makes a really good read. Really, really good stuff. Probably my grail book, the book that I just would love to have copies of, and I've only got them in reprints, is the Silver Surfer solo series, Stan did with John Buscema. Jack Kirby did the very last issue off the top of my head. I think it's 18. It's almost Shakespearean in the sort of nature of tragedy. It's a lot of exciting action scenes and fights and stuff like that. But he makes out the Silver Surfer to be this troubled and lonely and, you know, spacefaring character trapped on Earth. And it is really, really beautiful stuff. A couple of other ones, Tales to Astonish 93 is just a single issue, which is the Hulk versus the Silver Surfer by Stan and Marie Severin, which is just this beautiful sort of moment, where the Hulk is insisting that Silver Surfer take him into space so he can escape, and the Silver Surfer having to say to him, look, I can't leave Earth, I'm trapped here. Mm. And the Hulk doesn't believe him, and it turns into this fight. But it's got real sort of poignancy to it, really interesting stuff. From something more recent, try Silver Surfer Parable by Stan Lee and Moebius, believe it or not. And it's set on Earth in the future, where the Silver Surfer is living as a sort of homeless man on the streets of New York. And Galactus returns against his promise, because he promised never to return, didn't he? And yeah. he's sort of proclaimed as the god of free will and the permissive society. And the whole of Earth goes nuts for this new god, Galactus, that's arrived before they realise the truth of the matter. And it's not Moebius' best work, I'll say that, but Moebius and Stan Lee, and it's got a real poetry to it. It really, really is interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it's only... I think you can get both. It's only two-issue miniseries. I think Epic put it out off the top of my head, but it's only a couple of quid on Comixology, and it's well worth reading. And you can't beat Moebius, It's just some great stuff. And if you pick out some of the Thor issues, there's a few Kirby Stan Lee issues of Thor, which are just amazing. Just if you want full on cosmic in your face stuff, like just battle after battle of like real power, real sort of energy to the pages, then have a look at that as well. Just a few recommends if you fancied reading something after this.
Nice.
Well,
we said we were going to mention a question. I think it's time we tackle it.
Yeah.
A creator recently. Who wants it? Have we got the question to hand or whatever?
No, I can't source the question.
We've briefly sort of mentioned it, but what was the gist of it, lads?
It was essentially now that Stanley's passed, who would be. Who could you think of? It would be the next person in line to take the mantle up, or who is like Stan nowadays? Who have we got? That was it, wasn't it?
Who will be the ambassador for comics moving forward?
Ambassador for comics.
Now it's a tricky
one. Got me.
It's
got me.
I really thought about this for ages, thinking who it could be.
And obviously, people go, well, "What about this creator? What about this creator? What about this creator?" I mean, things have changed a lot, you know, the comic market and certainly just media in general has changed a lot, probably to the point where in order to be successful, you have to be really annoying with a YouTube video or some sort of social media campaign.
To me, the thing about Stan is he was very intent on pursuing and pressing on you his own personality. But he was doing it for the reasons of progressing Marvel as a company.
Yeah.
Well, now people are the cult of personality. To be a writer, you've got to have a following and you've got to be this iconic personality, haven't you? You see it in a lot of writers these days. But it seems often a more selfish pursuit these days than perhaps. Yeah.
One person I could perhaps offer up, and it's a bit of a smaller company, but that's Peter Cimetti from Alterna Comics.
Okay.
Whenever I've seen him, the way he handles people on Twitter and handles himself, he comes across as a real gent, really nice. It's all about people reading the comics and getting the comics out there. And if anyone comes to him with kind of any attitude, he's real kind of like someone in a shop would handle it, like really nicely, and tries to help him out and see what the problem is and see if he can handle it and smooth it over. And you can't say that a lot about many people on many creators on social media.
No,
I'm sure we can all throw our names in. I think we'll probably, if you don't mind, just play a little bit of devil's advocate. Is that I really like that guy. I have to say, I've never seen anything less than professional from him.
No,
I've not seen everything, but whenever I see him, you're right, man.
But, there's a bit of a flare up, but I couldn't really get to the bottom of that, and I didn't see any kind of smoking gun.
There's a lot of that going on in there.
Yeah.
Lots
of smoke, no gun.
he's a little bit unknown to take that mantle, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not known enough. It's horrible to say someone's unknown. That's nonsense. So not perhaps known enough to take that mantle.
I would say he's on the path.
I think one of the issues that a lot of sort of creators or sort of personalities have, and this is very much prevalent of like small press and indie publishing anyway, is we see a lot of publishers come out of the gate. Sometimes there's a collection of big name creators that we knew from the 90s or, you know, the 80s or whatever, and they've come through and they say, we've got this collection, we've got eight books all by these creators, we've got this, we've got that. Yeah, it's brilliant. If we're still talking about it the same time the next year, it's a bloody miracle. Because people die on the vine, or like, you know, people shout when they haven't got anything to back it up just yet. Now, when obviously at Stan's time, he could go out because he had an army of the most professional and top range artists, writers, inkers, and stuff working away in those offices. He could go out and shout about it to everyone, and when people checked out the work, you had the likes of Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, you know, everyone doing all, you know, so he had ammunition to back it up. And I think that's the issue with a lot of, certainly with modern comics, you know, we can all talk a good game, all of us, have we got what it takes to deliver?
It kind of moved away from that kind of like telling a story over a longer time to like these quick flash of interest. And then, like you said, it's just gone.
Yeah.
And you can only play that card so many times before people kind of get a bit, oh, it's this again, it's that, and then it's gone. If you're not holding them.
I think we talked a bit about this before we came on air, but because we are so tied up in comics and we love them so much, we're a little bit taken in by people, we're a little bit fooled by people, even in the length of time that we've been doing this podcast, and certainly the length of time I've been doing reviewing and stuff, is people come to you and they're like full of enthusiasm and they're all over you and, oh, we really love what you're doing on the pod, guys. Not everyone's like this, I like to point out, but a lot of people, and you're like, oh, right, this is really amazing what you're doing. Yeah. I really like your books.
I mean, we you want to see them succeed. Yeah. You want to see them do well.
When they haven't got anything to publicise, they back off you and you don't get a reply from them sometimes. And I think we're subject to that a little bit. I think as a wider comics world, we're taken in, and I really like Mark Miller, and I really like his energy, and I really like a lot of his books. But occasionally, I'm caught up in the circus of it all. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
I think he's, if you're talking about like what Stan was great at, I think he's, for me, the most easily comparable modern version of that kind of thing in terms of here's a product, I'm creating it, oh, it's going to be here, it's going to be on Netflix, it's going to be a comic, this is amazing, this was a comic script, now it's going to be a movie, but it's always, you know, he's built up this universe, he's built up a major business off his own back and doing it, and people know Mark Miller. Do you know what I mean? He goes to the he goes to the BAFTAs and things like that, for God's sake. Do you know what I mean? He's our modern Stan Lee, if that makes sense. He's not, you know, not on the same level, but I think that's what we've got. I think if you were to sort of say who would be the modern version of that, I think Mark Miller's probably the strongest contender to call that.
There is a little bit of that, and I think certainly in the UK, I'm gonna make you right on that, dude. Mm. I'm a little bit cynical. I'm a cynical old bastard occasionally.
Yeah.
So I think he really promotes the artists he works with, doesn't he? You see that. I'm going to say, from an American point of view, someone who I find, and it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I find hugely personable and very positive and a great writer is Bendis. So I'm going to say Bendis from the American point of view. He's I kind of wait for the next shoe to drop. You know, I kind of wait for sometimes because I'm a cynical old bastard. I wait for people to let me down, and he never has.
Yeah,
fair enough.
And I don't like everything he's written, but I like the fact that he's doing what he does, and he's having success now with movies and TV series and stuff like that as well.
And he's always just been really nice about it. I don't think you can begrudge him.
But can we put the whole of the comics world on these guys' shoulders? No. I'm going to say
no.
We can't anymore, can we?
No.
It's too diverse. It's too mixed up. There's too many people involved in it, you know.
And also, there's too much. I don't know. The waters of quality are a lot muddier. You know, we love. I mean, I think independent comics and self-publishing and everything else has never been stronger. Maybe that's because I'm doing a show about it. I don't know. I'm more aware of it, but. You know, Kickstarter, you know, indie publishers, whether it be from like Avery Hills to Image or even Dark Horse or whatever, it's never been stronger. And the individual voices, you know, for instance, someone like Noelle Stevenson, who did Nimona, is now like the She-Ra, you know, she runs the She-Ra Netflix animated show. Do you know what I mean? You have these independent creators who are doing stuff off their own back and then having huge success about it, but they're all individuals. We live in a community of individuals.
Yeah, now. Luke Pearson's the same, you know. Hilda and you know guys like that.
Yeah,
I worry that there's no one. Yeah. I was chatting to Pat Mills about this after Stan passed, and we were chatting about it on DMs and stuff, and I was saying I worry that there's no one left now. There's no for American comics. There's no sort of protector image, father figure, whatever you want to call it. You know. Yeah. Looking down on it, and if you ask the general member of the public in the street in the high street in Croydon and said, oh, you know, who runs comics, they go, isn't it Stan Lee? You know, they would almost say that, wouldn't they? You know? And I think I'm worried that we don't have that now. That's I worry that
on a slightly kind of downer note, like what we seem to have a lot of, and perhaps because I see a lot on Twitter, is people, comic creators, arguing with Twitter personalities and these feuds going on over Twitter about comic creation and creators tweeting photos of their arseholes and stuff. And it's like, would this happen under Stan Lee's watch? Would he be cool with this? And 9 times out of 10, no. And I'm not saying what one side's done to the other is worse than whatever, but it's like, what the fuck, man? We're making comics here and you're doing this.
We need that person to grab them and say, look, fuck's sake, grow up.
What the fuck are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Yeah, I put that thing up today. I saw you liked it, Vinter. I said, you know, Twitter is not a court of law.
Yeah.
No. As well. I think people decide on people, and sometimes for criminal reasons, because of the amount of Twitter followers or what they replied to. You know, I think there's a lot of fucking people who need to say, look, if this has happened, you go to the police. If this has happened, you go to a tribunal. You don't start fucking doing stuff online. You know?
I mean, mob rule is not something you want for fucking...
Yeah, exactly.
They had to knock it on the head years ago because it used to get so out of hand.
Yeah.
That once the kind of the mob takes over, you're fucked because it's only a certain amount of time before they turn on you. But...
It's like a sort of really rubbish version of a gladiatorial arena where everyone's shouting for someone to kill someone else.
Yeah.
And instead it's just like, I'll give them a paper cut or, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of, we're kind of finding our feet with social media in that regard. And as creators, we're the first to kind of come across it, the first like kind of couple of generations who's been suddenly gone from nothing to being connected to the whole world. And
you can
discuss opinions with people on the other side of the world for good or ill.
Yeah.
One of the kind of slight frustrations I find anyone, if you've made a comic book, that's such a great achievement.
Yeah.
But a lot of people feel like the comic book has to, if it doesn't lead to like an animated series or a film or something, like you haven't done it yet. And it's like, no, that's not the case.
No, just comics. Yeah. Mm. I said that to a couple of people at Bath when I was chatting to them. I was saying, look, it's a cartoon now. I said, I'm not one of these guys who goes on about, oh, it's now a cartoon, because it's about comics to me.
Yeah,
that is my hobby. Yeah. The movies and the TV series and the cartoons are something nice.
Yeah,
I enjoy a lot of them, but if they all went away, I'd still be reading comics. Yeah. It's still my hobby.
The only reason that's there is because this is so fucking great.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. So if you made a comic, good on you.
Any other suggestions? Who else could we see? who would be in charge of comics? You know, is there?
There's too many worlds of comics now, isn't
there? I feel like Eric Larson could be like a grumpy uncle.
Probably the uncle at the wedding that's, you know, you're listening to talking, thought, oh god, can he say that publicly?
Or Shelley Bond could be your very honest sister who'll just tell you what it's like, Well, I mean, Pat for England, you know, it's different countries, different regions, you know, mainstream comics, it's Pat, isn't it?
Agreed.
No one else.
I mean, Robert Kirkman, you know, he had his moment. Yeah. He had his certainly Stanley moment, didn't he? When he put out that
manifesto. Yeah,
the manifesto, which at the time a lot of people were like, "What's he talking about? Oh, what a load of shit!" And then it came to fruition, really. So.
Yeah, it did pretty much, didn't it? Yeah, it did pretty much.
Yeah,
familiar with it. I want to look that up.
He basically wrote a manifesto. I think he didn't say it on YouTube or something, because I remember there was people green screening the background, weren't they, and all sorts of things were going on. But he basically said, look, comics, you want to survive in comics, you go to the big two, you have a couple of hits, and then you go and do a career around Image or somewhere else, and that's where you're going to make your money. And a lot of people went, this is outrageous, you know, and the usual people, you know, at the time it did seem a little bit, you know, unfounded, and
because people were like, oh, he's just saying that because he's got the Walking Dead, blah blah blah.
And then most people have gone and done it.
So
some success or not success, you know, not everyone's been successful at it, but people
always, you know, naturally Kirkman's walked into the producing and you know, TV stuff as well, but he's still making comics. He's still doing it.
And he's still great to listen to and sensible. I've listened to a couple of interviews he's done recently and I thought, right, you know what, you're still thinking about it, talking about it.
Yeah,
he's still talking about the comics he's making. You know, I'm really impressed.
Invincible is fucking dynamite. That's one of my favorite comics series ever. Yeah.
And I'll never forget, like, he when I got the first trade of The Walking Dead way back in the day, and there was a letter from him in the beginning, sort of said, "You got to understand, people, this is very surreal for me. This is from a guy who wrote the comic Battle Pope, and he put himself on credit card debt, wasn't it, just to get comics, you know, some comics made, and then look at him now. So just have faith in your ideas, just write it, and you know, just,
I mean, how long ago is that? What's that,
god,
12 13 14 years ago, maybe more. The world's even changed since then, though, isn't it? That's the problem.
The world
really has changed, and who have we got running companies now? There's a few good eggs out there. I mean, you could say Tom King, but Tom King's very much doing his own thing, you know. You could say Tom Brevoort, but he's very much doing his own thing. And, you know, Peter Palmiotti or Joe Quesada or something, but they're very focused on their own jobs and, you know, their own projects and stuff like that. You know?
Yeah.
I think we're missing out on a few of the older creators. I think we could really do with the John Ostranders and Tim Trumans and Doug Mensch and Mark Wolfmans and, you know, these sort of people coming back and writing stuff. And we went talking to Mike. Yeah. Mike Baron about it, weren't we? He can't talk him into letting him do a Punisher. And look at the book he used to do.
He's fucking chock full of ideas as well.
You almost need like another creator who's had like a legendary career, I don't know, writing Batman and Marvel comics and stuff like that, to just start something new and then just shout about it and just introduce new voices and stuff. Do you know what I mean? There has to be someone just needs to come along and shake things up a little bit.
Ways. I mean, I haven't got a solution, and I think about it a lot about what's wrong
with
comics.
We're the solution. We're the cure. And quality is the
cancer. We're the cure.
Yeah, I was about to say quality is the disease, and we're the cure.
We're the cure.
Oh no, that's not right.
Well, we're currently working away on our respective comic issues for Awesome Comic Issue 4.
Nice segue, Dan.
Well done.
Yes. Awesome Comic. I hope you enjoyed that chat about Stanley. I think
I enjoyed it, man. I'm sorry I vented a little bit there, but he meant a lot to me. Are you going to imagine I've called my dog Stan? That sort of thing. He was real. Him and Shatner are the two guys. They're the two guys for me. That's all I wanted to, you know, my life meet. And I did.
So, you know, how could we not say something about the man's legacy?
Anyway, I feel disrespected that we've gone from Stanley to what some of the stuff we see now. It's like, I wish we had more of the Stan spirit at times.
Yeah, I feel a bit embarrassed sometimes by stuff, and I think what would Stan think about that, you know, if he looked at that and thought, what are you doing showing your bumhole on Twitter, for Christ's sake?
Stop doing that, Dan.
But
yes.
Only on DMs.
Oh, yeah. Don't I know it. How do you manage to get an animated GIF like that, Dan? It's amazing.
And it talks.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just wind.
Much like most of this show. But yes, as we were saying, Awesome Comics issue 4 is in progress as we speak. We're all hard at work putting it together, and it's going to be launched at True Believers next year, which is happening on February the 2nd. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Have you?
I might be doing a panel, actually. I got an email about did I fancy running the panel?
Yes, there's going to be all kinds of. We're going to be talking to the guys from True Believers, and you may hear their voices a bit sooner than
But you would imagine.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, we grind them into the sand and defeat them.
Yeah.
Well, all right. We might as well tell you now.
I can't say that. I'm writing the questions. Impartial.
No, you might have given it away, Tony.
No.
It's what we're going to do every year now. Just
grind. When me and Vince want to win, we want to do it fair and square.
Yeah.
Yeah, I happen to be there. You haven't even asked me about any of the questions. You've done quite well.
Yeah.
And tell you what sort of things should we be looking up?
Yeah.
Erotic comics, obviously.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Got that base covered.
Yes, our next couple of shows, the last shows of 2018, are going to be this. Next week, we are doing our faves of 2018, where we're going to, you know, we've narrowed down the field. We've got some nice sort of a selection of books, different categories, like we normally do. We've sort of slimmed down the categories, haven't we? Keeping it pure, so we've got more time to do
it. Is it about eight or something like that? I think it's not that many.
I think it is. So over the next couple of days, we're going to put out what the categories are. And if you lovely listeners want to give us your version, you know, just let us know, and we might read them in the next show and stuff.
Because
this isn't a best of. This is just, and anyway, if you've listened to the show over the past year, you know we have been goddamn blessed with how much quality we've read this year.
It's been hard work slimming it down to this.
Every year is getting harder to pick out sort of names and books and shortlist stuff. So already thank you to everyone that we've read one of their books. Is amazing. So next week's going to be I'm thoroughly looking forward to that show. That's going to be a cracking one. So you can get in touch with us about that. But then on our last show of 2018, which will probably go up just New Year's Eve into the
New Year's Eve. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're doing the big fat awesome quiz of the year, because around the Christmas time, you know, probably we won't have that many listens because everyone's off doing their own thing. You know, we're spending time with family, friends, and generally, well, we're probably all still reading comics anyway, because that's kind of what we do around the Christmas festive period, isn't it?
I'll get the hump if I don't get any comics for presents.
I've
already got my graphic novel lined up for Christmas Eve.
Lovely.
Oh, have you?
Richard Baker.
Lovely.
Locked and cocked and ready to, you know.
I love the fact that you stopped at the word rock. But yes, what we're going to do something a little bit different. It probably won't be one of our epic lengthy episodes that you normally have.
No.
But yeah, we're going to do a quiz show. That's basically
That'd
what it's going to be. So it is going to be Team Awesome, which is myself and Mr. Daniel Elizabeth Butcher.
Yeah.
And we are
going to kick ass and take names.
Yep, I'm glad you got that right. And we will be going up against the team of Andy Hanks and Stuart Mulrain from
True Believers.
From True Believers, and the nerds that haunted themselves. Is that the podcast?
True Beloosers? Is that the name of them?
They will be after this. Bring your A game, son.
We do know there's going to be a Robocop round, which is going to be.
Yeah,
God, Spark's gonna fly.
Yeah,
yeah. I've already written those ones. Yeah. I know what those ones are gonna be. They're so not easy.
If anyone out there, anyone out there likes a comedy panel show, that's what we're gonna be doing. If it works, if it works well, it might be a yearly tradition. If it doesn't, we'll never do it again. That's what we'll
never talk about it again.
Yeah, but it will be hosted. The Quizmaster, the great watcher from beyond, will be. It will be he who shall not be named, apart from his name is Tony Esmond. Yes, he will be the quizmaster, because you've listened to the show when we've talked about comics past, present, and beyond. we all know that he's the bloke you want on your pub quiz, isn't he?
Especially so we didn't, in the boobs round. Yeah, the right round have written just about boobs.
Yeah, yeah, so we didn't think it'd be fair if anyone had Tony on their team.
Yeah, so it'd be massively unbalanced.
So as such,
a bit personal.
So yeah, you should get that looked at, Tony. Seriously, that shouldn't hang down like that. But he's going to be the quiz master, and yeah, it's going to be interesting. He hasn't shown us any of the questions. We're going to be totally dead, and we're probably going to lose badly, aren't we, Dan?
No. Yeah. No, you can't let me down. Do not let me
hand
down.
Out a drubbing.
Remember where you heard this.
Gonna be ladling out spoonfuls of whoop ass.
God. less of the whoop. Right, okay. Have we got any shout outs this week, gents?
I've only got a retrospective one because we're recording this early.
Yeah.
And by the time you listen to this, I will have had will have been to Rome to see Mr. McCune, Stuart McCune, by the human beings and by anything he does. And we're having lunch and going to the Pollock exhibition in Rome. Yeah. With the one and only Mauro. So I'm going to meet Mauro.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
This might actually be the last time you ever hear his voice. We don't
know. I was just thinking that.
That is going to be the best lunch ever with the three of us around it. Do you know what I mean? It's just going to amuse me no end.
Considering how spicy your mailers are getting, that's going to be a wonderful conversation. Just take the recorder with you just to have it on the table.
I'm thinking of doing it, actually, taking a recorder, just to sort of chat to them. But. Yeah. Yeah, so I've got them presents. I've got the sorted all their presents out today, so I'll be taking them out. There's a few comics going out my rucksack. Yeah, good.
Nice. You're a nice person, aren't you, Tony?
Yeah. I know. Sometimes.
Yeah. He's nice all the time. Dan, do you have any shout-outs? Normally you surprise me.
No.
There's the man I know and love.
There we go. Thank God he's back.
He's back.
You can buy a shout-out from me. Just... DM else.
You are a whore. You're shameless. Absolutely shameless. Do you take card payment? Anyway.
Card PayPal.
So this week's been a lot of fun. We've got a couple of quick just recommendations for you. Tony, have you got one?
I've got... Well, kind of.
We're not doing the traditional recommendations because as this more of a topic sort of show, we thought we'd just do some short, sharp.
Yeah, I've kind of got one. I put a question out on Twitter this week. Is it okay to like a comic just for the cover?
oh, yes, I remember this.
Yeah, and I'm going to say I'm going to recommend the cover of The Best Defense, Namor, Issue 1. And the cover is by Ron Garney. And it is just... beautiful. It is easily one of my favorite comic images this year, of Namor sort of bursting out of the surface in the sea, flying out. You can see the wings on his feet, and he's in that sort of traditional swimming trunks. So there's a real power to it.
That was I remember that was on a short list when I picked my sort of best covers of the week. That was definitely I didn't know it was Garney. He is an undersung talent.
Totally, man. And I want him to draw comics now, and I'd actually seen this on his I think on his Instagram page a few months ago and liked it and thought this is fucking perfection. The insides are written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Carlos Magno, colors by Ian Herring, lettering by VC's Travis Lanham, and edited by Tom Brevor, and they are a fucking embarrassing mess of nonsense. So don't worry about reading it. It's just written by someone with no concept of who the Submariner is. At one point, he refers to his advisor in his undersea kingdom as his consigliere, and I thought, that's just someone who's seen The Godfather acting clever. You know, it's... and at the end of it, no spoilers, he kind of turns into the Silver Surfer, and I went, what? So get that. Get it for the cover. If you can get it without buying a comic, I'd suggest you do. And the other cover I wanted to mention was the Hulk version of that. There's a sort of The Best Defense of the Hulk, and it's art by, the cover's by Ron Garney again. It's a sort of close-up of the Hulk punching you, basically.
Yeah.
Another fucking amazing cover, and a terrible interior. But some just amazing covers, which should be prints, and I would easily frame, bottom of the wall.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I must say, like, obviously, for those who don't know, so every week on Twitter, we post up, like, our just some pics of the covers that we see on a Comixology browse and stuff.
Yeah,
it's always good fun. Something you get some good, you get some bad. We won't talk about the bad on here, but you know, definitely check us out on Twitter every Wednesday if you want to see some covers, because some stunning stuff. From so much so that I've picked up books kind of based on the cover.
Yeah,
a couple of times, we've
always done that.
Yeah. Thankfully, on Comixology, you can see a preview of the interior. Yeah. Always do that. Always.
Yeah. I kind of regret not doing that in the covers. Yeah. These were physical copies I bought. I kind of regret not doing.
Someone did. I think it was Gail Simone asked this question on Twitter about the comic cover, and I think a comic cover get you to pick it up and take a look, but if the interior art is not on par with the cover, I'm kind of like, that might put me off.
Yeah.
But in your case there, Tony, that's kind of real, oh, fuck's sake. That was irksome.
I'm kind of glad I've got them because I like the cover image so much, but comics ain't cheap these days. And they were just a bit like, really?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Some Marvel writer was put on something on Twitter about saying canon comics and the legacy stuff is just a massive fucking pain in the ass. And it's like, well, if anything, it's fucking great for me at least. And like you said, the whole Marvel universe interlocking, that's what gives it its strength in the foundation, and the idea of just fucking that off for a couple of issues because you can't do a bit of research.
A lot of the time why I'm there for them.
Yeah.
Because they feel like family to me. Like I've got that rich history, and I've learnt it all, and I've read it all, and there's a familiarity for me around it all. And then sometimes you just read that and you think you don't know who the Submariner is at all. He's sort of wandering around all these undersea kingdoms trying to get people to go on his side, and this is a guy who single-handedly invaded the surface world on his own.
It's kind of like if you're writing and you can't be bothered to pick up the canon of a character you're writing for, I don't even know where you're going for the fucking job. If you said, I write the Submariner, so what do you know about him? Oh, it's just some water guy. I'll make it up. It's like, no, you have to read up the fucking all about the character and
It looks very much like something who knows the Aquaman movie's coming now.
Yeah,
there's a bit of that going on. Yeah, there you go. Each to their own. Someone might like it.
Everyone's comics is someone's first.
Yeah,
that could be theirs.
Yeah.
Could be their last.
Yep.
That's not being bitchy.
Yeah. What's your recommendation this week then?
I got sent through a book, Chlorophyll, by Charles H. Raymond.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fantastic. I think I helped with the name in the comic.
Oh, okay.
I pitched in. And as a reward, I pop up in as a shop, my name, Dan's Butcher.
Oh, yeah.
How cool is that?
That's great.
The main characters wandering past it, which is great. And there's numerous other sort of little nods to indie comics via sort of little signs on bus stops and little things going on in the background. It's a lovely little comic. If you check out our friend Charles on Twitter, he would be able to tell you where to get this lovely little book.
Awesome. There will be a link in the show notes.
Yes.
As there will be for my little recommendation this week. We touched on it a little bit in our Stan talk, but I think Marvel Comics The Untold Story is well worth a read.
I love that book.
It's by Sean Howe. And I think it was released in 2013, but for me, it's still one of the big sort of like histories of it's sort of the unvarnished Marvel comics throughout the years.
Yeah.
You know,
there's an audiobook as well. I think
that was the one that I actually listened to because I had the book for ages, and I actually just got it on Audible. And it's 17 hours and 52 minutes. There's a lot of Marvel Comics history to talk about, but it's fascinating stuff. Definitely worth getting.
The Grant Morrison one's good as well for a bit of history of comics as well. If you listen to that, he touches on a lot of the Bronze Age stuff, and you can get an audiobook of that as well. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So it's always fascinating stuff. I mean, books, much like documentaries, there's always going to be something that people will think, well, I don't necessarily agree with that. But I think Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, if you're into Marvel Comics and want to know more about the history of the publisher themselves, it's a must like read, isn't it? I think it's a great book. So, yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes for that. Check it out. And certainly, I mean, I can see just on the Audible page, you know, people who bought this also bought. And there's one called Slugfest. Have you heard of this?
No.
No.
Inside the epic 60-year battle between Marvel and DC.
Oh, right. I think I might know about this one. I've not read it, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, it's all, what I like about this is when you've read something and then you see, you know, similar sort of thing. Super Gods, is that one you're talking about, Tony?
Yeah, that's a good. That's a good read, actually. It's yeah, well
that's
written.
The Grant Morrison one. Really nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'll put a link in the show notes for all three of those. So you know, something to read over Christmas, etc. Yeah. Or maybe in the new year. Of course, this is coming out. It's almost Christmas now, isn't it? God bloody
hell. Christ, yeah.
I know.
Yeah. But there you go, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Something a bit different for you all. But let us know what you think in several different ways. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we will, of course, be talking about the upcoming faves and the awesome quiz of the year, etc. Go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, like us there. And if you want to talk about making comics, or like, you know, just comic events, or just anything in general without any hard selling, and just a fantastic group of people, then join the group, the Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk. Thank you for listening to us, whether it is on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review. We just really appreciate it, because we're needy. And, of course, same if you listen to us on any of the networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
The one and only Pod Excelsior.
Yes.
Yes.
Get in. Yes. That was a clean one this week.
It was, yeah. Well, I actually we had a chat earlier and I told you none of you to say Excelsior because I wanted to leave it for the impact of saying that later
yeah.
on.
Yeah. So, yeah, we thoroughly enjoyed this episode, and I hope you did too. So where can people find us online, etc., if they want to know more? Tony?
Twitter, S-O-S-E-Z-O-H-Y-Z, or neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk. I had a bit of a quiet week on there this week, but there'll be stuff going up, probably as you listen to this, from my trip.
Nice. It'll be can't wait for that.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
I'm looking forward to that.
We hope you get to post it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to the scene near the scene of Way of the Dragon where Chuck and Bruce fought. So I can't wait. I was watching a bit of that earlier. Yeah, looking forward to that as well.
Amazing. So otherwise, me and Vince are gonna have to do like a Taken style caper.
Oh God, there's an episode.
Vince will be on a revenge mission, but we have his Gruffalo lunchbox with him.
Yeah, always. Yeah, I'm always packing.
So you can find out about that on Twitter @VanguardComic or the journey readvanguardcomic.com.
Nice.
Nice. Well done. You can follow me on Twitter @JesterDiablo. And you can find out more about my comic at theredmassfrommars.com. Thank you for joining us this week. Hope you go forth and reload your cool comics. And one last thing before we go. I think from all of us, Dan, Tony, and myself, we just want to say, thank you, Stan.
Yeah.
For everything. So, stay awesome, everyone. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Being interested in what you're doing. I know my father, the poor guy, it was during the Depression, and he was out of work most of the time. So his life was shorter, and it was because there was nothing really that he was doing that could interest him. But I think if you do what really excites you, it just keeps you going as long as possible. Believe it or not, I almost never have been stuck on anything. Writing comes very easily to me. Everything else in the world is tough, but writing, I don't have any problem with that. I can't write fast enough to keep up with the things I want to say. I think whatever you do, you should do what you most want to do and what you're best at. Too many people don't really do what their heart's desire is, but they try to do something else because they think, well, it'll be easier to get a job or to make money. And if that happens, then when you're doing it, you feel like you're working. But if you do what you really want to do, you feel like you're playing. It's easier for you to do. Em, I know I wanted to be a musician when I was young, but I had no talent for it. If I had wasted time trying to be a musician, I'd have either been a failure or I'd have been just an ordinary musician. But I love writing also, and it came easier to me. So I figured I'd stay with that. I think you have to do what you do best and what you enjoy. And I began to realize that entertainment is very important in people's lives. Most people, almost everybody, have lives that have problems and troubles and things to worry about. And if you can entertain somebody, take his or her mind off the things that would normally be bothering them, that's a good thing to do. Mostly, I've just enjoyed everything I've been doing, and I think my professional life has been a source of much pleasure for me.